This is Colleen Galvin Holzheimer. I'm in Lewistown, Montana with Helen Jo Shipman, and we are going to be doing an interview today for The Gathering, a collected oral histories of the Irish in Montana. I'm not liking the recording level, so I'm going to see if I can increase it. Hello, Jo.
Hello. Is it working?
Yes, it is. I'm just not seeing the recording level bouncing up like I feel like it should. So let's just speak clearly toward me, and hopefully we've got enough volume on here for the recording. All right. So tell me a little bit about yourself, Jo.
I was born and raised here in central Montana. I've lived several other places since then and came back.
Did you grow up here in central Montana?
Yes, I grew up at Winifred, which is about 40 miles north of Lewistown.
And did you live in town or on a farm?
No, we lived numerous places on farms around Winifred. And in the wintertime, I went to school in Winifred and lived with my grandmother.
Did you do all your schooling then in Winifred?
Through high school, yes.
And where else have you lived?
I've lived in Washington, in Oregon, Stanford, Montana, and here out of Lewistown.
All right. And what kind of jobs have you had?
Numerous. Between high school and college, I worked at the Puget Sound Navy Yard in Bremerton, Washington. When I was between my junior and senior year of college, a close friend of mine wanted me to come out and visit with his family in Oregon, and his father was taking a new job as superintendent of a school, and he informed me that when I got through school, I was going to come there and teach. I had no intention of ever teaching. So my senior year of college, I spent a lot of time taking education courses.
What college institution did you graduate from?
The University of Montana.
All right. And where do you live now?
I live about 15 miles out of Lewistown.
On a farm or ranch or just
yes, on a ranch.
Small rural, okay. And is that part of your career now, or are you just retired to the...
Not particularly. Occasionally I have to help transport somebody back and forth. We have numerous small parcels of land between my husband and my son and I, but they're not connected, and so I'm carting people back and forth, or flagging cows or flagging machinery. Other than that, my occupation, I'm a volunteer, but my occupation is mainly with mental health issues.
All right. And are you married?
Yes.
Obviously, you alluded to that. And at what age did you marry?
The first time I was 22.
Okay. And is your spouse also of Irish ancestry?
My first husband was Czech Bohemian. My present husband has a little bit of Irish, but most of his family will not admit it. He's also part English, and that's probably the reason.
Okay. Tell us about your children. How many and what are they up to?
I have 9 children, mine, his, and ours. I'll just go down the list. My oldest daughter, who worked with geriatrics here in Lewistown, died suddenly last year. My first son, Philip, farms. He no longer farms with my husband. He has a separate operation, but he lives equivalent of a block from us. My second son, Lawrence, has a very confidential type job that he can't tell anybody about. He calls himself a safety officer, and he never alludes to anything else. He works, he has a home out by Spokane, but he's not very seldom there. And he goes around various places in the United States and also elsewhere in the world. My next daughter, Francine, lives at Saco, Montana. They have a farm and ranch there. They have cows and sheep and some grain and hay. And she works as a vet assistant. The next one is my daughter, Mary, who works here in town and does accounting. My daughter, Eleanor, lives at Malta, Montana. She's a civil engineer by profession, but was teaching math in the school there until they had to downsize, and she now works with the Boys and Girls Club and also does remedial instruction with kids in the school. The next daughter is Sheila, who lives in Billings. She's a prosecuting attorney for the Yellowstone County. My son Andrew goes back and forth between Kalispell and Las Vegas, and he was working as a supervisor at a construction firm, but when all of the, and I call it a depression, came, they shut down completely, so now he's truck driving across the United States. And my youngest daughter, Zelda, lives in Billings and is a pharmacist.
Okay. Let's go back just a little bit and do some ancient history.
Okay.
And let's talk a little bit about your parents and how they came to be in this area and a little bit about their background.
My father came from Geneva, Nebraska. He had been in the Navy, gone through Montana three times, and at that time Montana was beautiful and green with lots of rain and very mild winters. And he was so impressed that he came back here to Homestead and brought my mother.
Would this be at about the time of the turn of the 20th century?
It was in 1914 when they came, when they opened up a lot of land north of Lewistown.
For homesteading?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my mother was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and then by odd circumstances was taken to Geneva, Nebraska. Supposedly, she was in an orphan home, and supposedly they knew nothing about her, but it was very obvious when my dad and my grandmother started doing some research that the person who brought her to Geneva was actually her mother and had brought her there to be adopted into a family there. And her middle name was Finnum, which is strictly an Irish name. And this lady's name was Donovan, which is, of course, also Irish. And through some research that my father and my grandmother did, my mother would do nothing to research her family. But through what they did, they decided, yes, she had come from Ireland. They did not know exactly where, but it wasn't from where my father's family came from.
What do you know of your grandparents, both maternal and paternal?
I know nothing of my maternal, other than the lady who was carting my mother around the country, obviously, was my mother, my grandmother. My father.
Did she come from Ireland?
We have no idea.
I have no idea. Okay.
On my father's side, my grandfather was, my family are basically Scotch-Irish. They're Northern Ireland, and that is mostly Scotch-Irish.
And talk about the county that your family was from.
Well, they're from County Down, and half the county are Carsons. And when we went there, we couldn't find anything out when the British came up. It's one of the reasons my family do not like the English. They burned all of the records they could get their hands on, and so we could find nothing in the records there. But I did find, through other sources, I found that our family came to the United States in the late 1730s. And we have my direct ancestor came to Pennsylvania. So I don't know which port they came through. And I have a list of my the men all the way from that ancestor down to my generation.
Talk a little bit about that you have researched, that genealogy. And I know that America was pretty much an agrarian country still at that time, and what activities your family might have been involved in as they were.
Well, some of my family they tended to be agricultural. One of my family is very, very famous on that side of the family. That's Kit Carson. Kit Carson's father was my ancestor's brother. Then we are also related to John Glenn. He's fairly close. He's a third or fourth cousin. But that's way down the line. And someplace here, I have the list, and I don't know where I put it. Well, this, by the way, is our family tartan.
Oh,
that's
beautiful.
That's one on the... And then there, inside is the hunting tartan. Now, that's the Irish one. That's not the Scotch one.
So the McPherson tartan is the one?
We belong to the McPherson clan.
All right. And maybe I can take a photocopy of this before we leave today.
Okay.
And you've got the McPherson crest there.
Yeah, here it is. Grandfather was Alexander, who came to America with his brothers Andrew and Samuel.
And what was their last name?
Carson.
Carson, okay, great.
And they came to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Now, one of them went to West Virginia, and the other one, I don't know where he went to start with, but they weren't my direct. And Alexander's son, William, was the next one, who was Lindsey Carson's brother, and Lindsey Carson was Kit Carson's father. And then Washington Irving Carson, and I have actually a picture of he, his wife, and his children. And then after him, my grandfather, William Harold, and who was probably born in Geneva, Nebraska. He was born somewhere in Nebraska. And then my father, Clyde Irving Carson, and my brother is also named Clyde Irving, and he was born in Winifred.
Montana.
In Winifred, Montana. And he has a son named Gerald Irving Carson.
So Irving is a common name that's run through your family.
Yeah. And I did not know that. When I first heard my father was named Clyde Irving, I thought, well, where'd that come from? And then when I started looking and I found the picture of my great-grandfather and his wife and children, I found that it was a family name. And it wasn't after Washington Irving, the author. It was a family name. Because this ancestor was older than Washington Irving. Mm-hmm. So,
did in your research or through family oral history, have you ever heard why they might have immigrated from Ireland to the United States?
Definitely. My family were, and continue to be, politically vocal, and they were enemies of the crown, so they went over for a short while back to Scotland and stayed with relatives there, and then they felt uncomfortable because that was endangering them, and so they came to the United States and spread out different places. Oh, and incidentally, Kit Carson has been in some books in history accused of being a bit of a rabble-rouser. He was not. His uncle Andrew came out west with him, and he drank, and he fought, and he was vocal. And some people have pinned his reputation on Kit Carson, which was not true.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So as America was spreading westward in its development, your family was also moving westward with that movement from the east coast of Pennsylvania to Midwest Nebraska and now in Montana.
Right. And at one time they were going west with other people who wanted to be on the frontier. Daniel Boone married one of my ancestors. Not Daniel Boone, one of his children married one of my ancestors. So obviously that part of the family had gone further down into Kentucky and then on further west.
Okay. Ever heard any stories about the history and origin of your family name? Just obviously it's a well-known clan name. I just wondered personally you had heard any stories that were passed down from your father or grandfather.
Not in particular. Some people think that a name, if it has an S-O-N on the end of it, means that that's someone's son. But when I started researching, and also from what my father said, we never found a time when the name was not Carson.
All right. So my next question would have been, has it undergone any changes? And obviously none that you have been able to.
Nothing.
Okay. We talked about some of those traditional names, such as Irving, that have come down through the generations. Are there any other names or nicknames in your family that tend to follow through the generations?
Yes, William, and oddly enough, not Alexander, but William and Harold and Andrew have followed down.
Those are very noble names.
Well, I'd like to think so.
Oh, they are. They come right out of that Anglo-Saxon era period of names.
Well, you use the word Anglo-Saxon. As a Northern Ireland person, one whose family were rebellious, we'd prefer not to allude to that. Now, one other name that's in the family, two others, George and Glenn both. Have passed down through the family.
How about feminine names?
Eleanor, very much so. Mary, to some extent. Catherine. And Florence. Florence is on the Glenn side of the family mostly. But the others, when I was doing research, I found that Eleanor was first used, probably, that I first found it mentioned was in the late 1700s.
Okay. Are you aware of any naming traditions in your family?
Yes. We tend to name our children for someone in the family, not a real close relative, usually someone like an aunt or a grandparent.
So you honor that person,
yes,
by naming. Okay. Let's see where we want to go. Are you aware, or have you been able to reacquaint with any family members that may have stayed behind in Ireland or Scotland?
No. We tried to I've been to Ireland 3 times and was going to go back this year, and the airfares jumped so much that 2 of the people going couldn't go, so we didn't. But we have... Go back to the question. I'm getting sidetracked.
Oh, that's all right. I asked if you'd ever been able to connect with any family.
No, because every place we went, we were really hopeful, one of the places, but everywhere we went, we could not find anything because the English had, when they went up into Ireland, they destroyed all the records. There is one other place that I haven't been to yet, and we figure next time we go, we will go there. There's a Presbyterian church. I have an ancestor who was a Presbyterian minister. And in our family, when my brother and I found that out, we just roared with laughter.
Because
the Presbyterian church in Scotland and Ireland punished the people who came to church. 3 services a day, no heat in the church in the winter, particularly in Scotland. And the children couldn't, even the children couldn't eat until the last service was over. Now, that's terrible punishment. But our ancestor was trying, as a minister, was trying to get them to be a little bit more accommodating to the congregation. And they almost disrobed him because of it.
What religious faith has your family practice, if any?
My only brother that's living and I are both Catholic. We were raised Episcopalian, but we had an unusual situation because there was only one church in the whole town of Winifred that had services every Sunday. It was Lutheran. So all of the children, including the Episcopal and some of the Catholic, went to Sunday school at the Lutheran church. When I left there, I went to Missoula. Well, no, I didn't go to Missoula first. Take that back. I went elsewhere. I went out to Bremerton. And I went to a Lutheran church because I thought it would be like it was at home. And I found that it wasn't. Our Lutheran church was a community church. And the Lutheran churches elsewhere all had their own set of ceremonies and regulations. It wasn't like what I was used to at all. And I was particularly, there are several different Lutheran churches, and some of them are very, very strict. I have encountered some that are more like what I grew up with.
Did you know your paternal grandparents?
No, he died. He was in the Spanish-American War, suffered a wound that never healed, and it developed into cancer, and he died quite young.
So then your father's father or mother never migrated out to Montana?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
My grandmother, my father's mother, came. My father was responsible for his wife and children. Well, he didn't have the children first. He had a younger sister that he was responsible for, and his mother, and his wife, and eventually 8 children, and his sister's children, and his mother.
So after his father was killed from wounds at the Spanish-American War, your father, as a young man, took on the responsibility of the remainder family.
Yes.
Okay. And then obviously met your mother in the same community where they all lived and married. Is that correct?
My mother was working at the hospital that my grandfather was in. And apparently his wound was a very ugly thing. It was on the side of his neck, going into his shoulder, and apparently it was a mess. And she was the only person working there who could clean and bandage his wound without repulsion. And he was so impressed that he told my father he had to marry that girl and take care of her. And my father
Did your grandfather know she was an orphan?
Yes.
Her care.
And she had been adopted at that time, a second adoption. Her first adoption, the mother died and they returned her to the orphan home, and then she was adopted again. But of course, by that time, she was probably 19 or 20 by the time my grandfather encountered her, because she married my dad at 21. They were both 21.
Okay, talk a little bit about their married life and how many children they had and when they decided to come west.
Well, they got married and came west practically immediately. They put all of their belongings in a boxcar. This was done then. People packed up everything they wanted to take with them, put it in a boxcar, and if they didn't have enough to fill the car, someone else did. And I believe with our family, I believe there were two or three families who had all their belongings packed into one boxcar. And they came to Lewistown, and by that time the railroad was to Winifred, so they went on to Winifred, unloaded everything, put it on a wagon, and took it to where their homestead was, which was a total disaster. It was bare ground, shale, where nothing grew. And very shortly thereafter, my grandmother got a settlement from the military for my grandfather through an act of Congress. And there is actually, I have a copy of that actual congressional act where they gave her a pension, and they gave her a settlement and then a pension after that. They took that and made a down payment on a farm where you could grow things. And then that's where my family started, and that's where most of us were born.
Tell me about your siblings and yourself.
Well, I'm way at the bottom.
One of the youngest.
My oldest sister was born in 1915 and lived in numerous places. My next sister was born in 1917 and married a man who had an Irish name, who coincidentally had been adopted and was not Irish at all. Back to the first sister married four times, and three of them were Irish. Americans, but Irish. My oldest brother, George, was born in 1919, and married a girl who was full Irish, and their name was Hill. And they looked Irish, and they acted Irish. It was very, very obvious that her father was an Irish Paddy. And my next brother married an English girl, and who died not too long after they were married, and then he never married again. And he also died very young. I had a sister then named Mary, who was born physically disabled, and who died at 14, and then I was born, and I married first a Czech Bohemian, and I had children, and after he died, I married an Englishman, who was part Irish.
So there were seven children in your family?
There were nine. There were eight.
Eight children.
And after me, when my brother Clyde, who married an Irish girl, and the marriage didn't last, and then he married another Irish girl, her name was McNary, and they have three children. Two of them are his non-biological children, and the third is my nephew Gerald Irving. And then there was my sister Evelyn, and I assume that her husband was German because his name was Jaeger, and I can't figure out any, and his family looked German.
When you were being raised by your parents, did they have any Irish traditions or customs? It sounds like perhaps they were still encouraging or Irish descendants. Any feelings about that?
Well, firstly, my father did not encourage us to marry or not marry anyone. It's too bad he didn't intervene in a couple of cases, but he didn't. He was very accepting. My father was very, very accepting of everyone. No one was judged by their ethnic background or their religious background. They were judged as individuals. But we did, yes, we had Irish traditions. We did not wear orange. We did not like orange. And we wanted nothing to do with the English. After all, they came and took over our country. And food-wise, my mother was a terrible cook. But my grandmother was a wonderful cook, and my father could cook a few things. And we liked Irish stew very well.
Did they cook it with beef or mutton?
Well, where we live, mutton was not very available, so we had it with beef. But since I've grown, my first husband and I raised sheep. And we cooked it not with mutton, but with lamb. And believe me, there's a big difference.
Indeed, there is.
And we ate the Irish soda bread. We also ate the only Irish dessert that there ever used to be, the sweet bread with the candied stuff in it. I believe it's called, what is it called, bannock?
I'm not an authority there that I can't tell you.
I don't know. I know that when my kids were in 4-H, one of them was as a food project. She decided to take food from her ethnic background. It was really good when she did the Czech Bohemian because they made the best desserts in the world and good other food. But when she did the Irish the next year, she said, "Mom, this is the dullest food I've ever heard of." The Irish now have improved their food. It's wonderful. You know, salmon and all kinds of things, where before, unless you lived on the coast, you didn't get.
Right. I think as far as the cuisine goes with Ireland, it really depended on what part of the country you lived in,
yes,
what resources were available to you. How about any music or games or other traditions, or where everyone was probably working so hard all the time?
Both my father and mother were wonderful singers. My father was a baritone. He sang only baritone. And when he went into the Navy way before he was old enough. He lied about his age and got away with it because he was full grown at 12 years old. So he sang opera to us all the time, and also Irish songs. My mother could sing from second alto to mezzo-soprano, and she sang Irish songs always to us also. They sang other songs, whatever was popular, but both of them sang Irish songs to us.
So obviously, your mother had learned that music in her background, unless they were part of a larger Irish community in Nebraska. You know where she might have gotten her?
I think that she just picked it up from songs that were popular and from stuff that my dad taught her. Because the families that she lived with were not Irish families.
Any Irish sports or games that were played or brought along?
Well, as far back as our family came here, I have no way of judging whether these were Irish games or not. I do know that we have some soccer enthusiasts in the family, but I think that came from somewhere else. And of course, all of us played card games, some of which are Irish, and some of which are not. She's locking the doors when we go out that door. I can't think of anything that was specifically Irish.
Okay. In your life around Central Montana, Lewistown and Winifred, were you able to associate with other people of Irish ancestry?
Oddly enough, Winifred had a really well-established caste system from Central Europe, from the Czech Bohemians to the Bohemians to the Austrians and down to the Croatians. But we were the only Irish family in the community, so we didn't, we got our things that were Irish from our own family, not from the community.
Not from the community where you grew up and live now.
I don't live there now.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no, I left the day after graduation.
Okay, very good. Let's see, I'm just kind of reviewing some of the areas that we have touched on and see if there's some additional questions here that might bring something to mind. How about military service? You talked about your grandfather being in the Spanish-American War and your father was in the Navy. What was his naval career like in after that?
Well, he didn't have a career. He spent 4 years there and came home.
Okay.
But our family have fought in every war that the United States has been involved in since the Revolutionary War. My ancestors, all of them, the three brothers, and then their children fought in the Revolutionary War. And then on down, every single war that the United States has been in. My one grandson was discharged from the military several months ago and then stayed on in Afghanistan in a civilian capacity and is just now out of Afghanistan and back in the United States, thank God.
Yes, thank God. Since your ancestors came into America as political asylums, have you found that any of your ancestors down through the line have continued in a political affiliation?
Not too much. The closest to that is John Glenn. And the rest of them, well, actually, come to think of it, Kit Carson was. I don't think he ever got he got a political appointment, but I think it lasted a very short time. And I don't, the rest of them have been more politically active, but not elective.
Okay.
My father, for example, was very, very supportive of Democratic candidates. I noticed that with people that I know, the Irish tend to be Democrats.
Indeed. How about some of the historical events through this time period? For example, did your family experience any repression, any anti-Catholic actions from KKK? And what might have been your family experiences during the Depression and World War II?
Well, going way back, our family were not Catholic. Coming from County Down, I had always thought they were Catholic. Coming from County Down, they were Protestants. And the Catholic just leaked in more recent years. I don't know of anything that they were involved in with the Ku Klux Klan, because our family have always tended to be to judge people by individuals, not by their race or their religion. I do know that in the Civil War, there were three children, and then the mother died, and then there were a whole bunch more children. before the Civil War, and the older children fought on the Union side, and the younger children fought on the Confederate side, and it was one of the things that was a really big stumbling block in following the chain of descendancy in my family, because my one cousin had put together this genealogy, and she had completely left out the three older children in the family, because the second wife would not accept them as her children, and probably they didn't accept her either. Our family are outspoken and strong-willed.
All right. But
we do get along with people. We are Irish. We get along with people.
That's right.
By the way, alcoholism is not a big situation. Everybody, when they, and I want to clarify this, because everybody, when somebody is Irish, they think that they are an alcoholic. When we went to Ireland, we ate in the pubs all the time. I saw one man who may or may not have been intoxicated, and I'm not even sure if he was Irish or not. We've gotten a bad name as being alcoholics, and I don't like it.
Good.
And one other thing that goes along with that. Allegedly, so many of the Irish are red-headed. So when we went to Ireland, one time we went out on a little island. There were no other people on that island that were not native to the island, but myself, my daughter, and a niece. And they invited us to First Communion and Confirmation, and so we went. And I thought, well, this is interesting. So I counted the red-headed children, and there was 2% of all those children that were red-headed. When we were at another place, because I had seen this one particular castle before, I just sat in the car and watched people, which I love to do. And right across the street was a school. So I counted all of the kids coming out of school. And there were 1.2% of those children, there were over 100 children I counted, were red-headed. So the Irish aren't any more red-headed than anybody else.
That's correct. Okay. Did you ever notice that your family have any special sayings or expressions in word, any colloquialisms that have come down particular to your family?
Not very many, other than we are very fluent swearing.
That's something. How about holidays? What holidays did you celebrate, and what kind of tradition did you bring down to your generations?
St. Patrick's Day is very, very special to us. And in spite of my present husband being only a little bit Irish, we have corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day, if he's home or if he isn't home. And other than that, that's the only Irish holiday that we celebrate. You know, we celebrate all the other traditional ones.
You pique an interesting question to me in that you say that your Irish ancestors were Protestant, and yet, being a Catholic myself, I think of all the saints as being Catholic, of course, and it's interesting that growing up Protestant, St. Patrick is an important tradition in your line.
Well, remember, even though we went to the Lutheran church, I was raised Episcopalian, and St. Patrick is recognized. And for example, here in Lewistown, St. James Church is the Episcopal Church.
Okay, great. We talked a little bit about food and food traditions and family. Any other food stories that come to mind other than your daughter doing some research? And
I can't think of anything in particular.
Other than things we've already talked about.
Yeah, things we've already talked about, yeah.
Okay. How about mementos and keepsakes? Any family heirlooms or keepsakes or mementos that you were able to see that came down from your parents or grandparents?
Well, since we've been gone from Ireland so long, any mementos and things would be more likely from the Pacific, because that's where my grandfather served and that's where my father served and that's where my brother served, my one brother. Okay. And also, come to think of it, I'll take that back, my other brother too, one in the Army and one in the Navy.
Okay.
There are certain things that we do or don't do. My children aren't that as much that way, but in my family, you wore green on St. Patrick's Day. I don't care whether it clashed or whether it didn't, you wore green. Uh-huh.
Joe and I are both wearing green today.
And I have my Celtic cross.
Yes, you do. Right. Let's see, how about some traditions and practices? Did you pick up anything, let's say, for christenings or funerals that were a particular family tradition?
I can't think of anything particular. We were very particular always as who we picked as godparents for our children.
Okay. Do you know where that practice came from?
No, I don't. I just know that so many of these things are just
innate,
so normal to us that we don't think of them as being different.
Exactly. I understand what you mean. We talked about your parents' music, how they were good singers. Did anyone dance in your family?
Yes.
Okay.
My mother was a terrible dancer, but she could do the Irish jig very well. I don't even know what, you know, it's somewhat similar to this river dancing, but not the same. It's a lot of stomping and a lot of kicking. And our family have always danced and have been musicians. My father had absolutely no musical training, and besides the singing, a friend left. He called it a squeeze box. It was one of the little concertinas, not the full-size accordion. He left it there at my grandmother's house. My dad was working somewhere where he was staying at my grandmother's, where we were going to school, and Mom was out on the ranch. And he picked that thing up and learned to play it.
By ear.
Yeah. No problem. He learned to play it. My one older brother and older sister were always trying to play some other instrument. They both started out with the guitar. They played the banjo. They played the violin. They played them all very poorly. They never did.
But they played.
But they played them. I didn't play much of anything. I played the clarinet for a while in the school band. I hated it. And so I went into the bass clef and played the bass horn by ear. I always thought I was reading the music and playing it. But then it dawned on me later, wait a minute. You were playing that by ear, and I must have played it reasonably well because I got picked to play in the pep band, and we had two bass horn players. And the other boy didn't get played. He didn't get picked, so I must have done a reasonably good job.
Okay, a little transition here. Just in general, do you recall any traditional or home cures for common ailments within your obvious frontier living out here in the West?
Oh, yes. They cooked cactus, and I don't know whether they put sugar in it or not, but it tasted real sweet. And it worked out as a cough syrup. I don't know how they got the spines off of it. I have no idea. All I know is that when I was a little kid, I had a lot of trouble with whooping cough. And then the other kids, of course, had got coughs too. We used that, and there was a thing called Denver mud that they heated. My brother had an infection that would come on the palm of his hand that's connected to his thumb, and it would get real, real sore and would break out, and they would heat up this stuff called Denver mud and put it on there and bandage it up, and it would take out the infection. And I don't know whether that stuff is still around or not. I've never seen it anywhere. I don't know anything about it. And there were a few other things. There were things like ginger tea. You used that for stomach cramps or menstrual cramps. And there were some other teas that they used for a variety of things. And
usually from herbal plants that grew in the area, in the local area?
Well, not always, because ginger didn't.
Right.
But mint grew wild, and we didn't use it for an ailment particularly, and maybe sometimes they might have used it for an upset stomach, but just as a tea that tasted good and made you feel good.
Speaking of tea, was that anything of a tradition in your family? Did they prefer tea over coffee, or what was their beverage?
My grandmother definitely preferred green tea, and she preferred very much so. I didn't care for green tea because I didn't like the way we looked. Mm-hmm. It looked. And it looked that way. We lived on a farm and we raised animals. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the connection.
Yes.
But always, tea was always something that we had. Very few people in our area drank tea. The only people that I can think of that drank it very much was a neighbor lady who was also Irish, and she was actually an Irish washerwoman, and she drank tea. And when I was a little kid, I'd go to her house, and she would make me a cup of tea, and she and I would sit there and drink it. And my dad preferred coffee, but in our household now, we have a coffee maker for company, but we drink tea only.
Okay. Kind of getting to the end of our interview here, Joe, and if it takes a moment to think about how you might want to respond to this, and thinking about striking changes in your life. You've lived a nice long life and hopefully many more years. What might have been one of your greatest moments of sorrow or joy?
Ooh, I would say when my father died, because he died too young. When my favorite sister, who practically raised me from the time I was born till I was six and then left home, and then I stayed with her off and on after that several times, and my favorite brother.
You lost your favorite brother?
Yes. He died of post-traumatic syndrome. We didn't know what it was called, but it was very obvious.
After the Second World War?
Yeah, well, he died a long... He was a tough guy. It took him 40 years to kill himself with alcohol and cigarettes. And he had gone through some terribly traumatic things. He was awarded the Purple Heart 3 times and the Bronze Star. So obviously, he had gone through a lot.
Saw a lot of action.
Yeah, he was at Pearl Harbor when it was first attacked, and he was there till he was in the military till the war was all over. And
did he live in this area also after the
some
war?
Of the time, quite a bit of the time at Kalispell. Some of the time at Bremerton, he had difficulty settling in one spot until finally his wife said, enough is enough, I'm buying this house. She worked also. I'm buying this house and I'm living here. If you want to move, fine, I'm staying here. And that was in a little town here close to Lewistown.
All right.
So.
All right. Well, I have enjoyed so much visiting with you today and learning. yourself and your family and your life here in Montana. As we close our interview today, are there any other comments that you would like to share or insights about your life as an Irish American?
Well, I have noticed that people don't tend to discriminate against the Irish. And when I fill out a form and it says, are you black, white,
Hispanic.
Polynesian, Hispanic, all of these things, I prefer to check other because I feel that we are a unique group.
I love that, Joe.
Well, I think we are.
I think we all think we are.
I think we do, and we have a right to be. The Irish have ruled, whether they did it by political election or not, have ruled in practically every country in the world, including most of South America and the Orient, but we still can't get our act together and get one country in Ireland.
United.
Yeah.
A united
and we
Ireland.
Should. There was no reason for England to keep a little chunk up there, the furthest away from them.
Absolutely.
And
it's divisive.
It is. It's very much so. But we noticed, like I say, I've gone to Ireland 3 times, and we've noticed when we go there, because I've been to other countries. And I liked Germany, and I liked Austria, and I liked the parts of Mexico that I saw, and Canada is basically like Montana. But the Irish people are so friendly and so helpful, and I think everyone that lives in America, and not just Irish, everyone should make one trip to Ireland. The experience is absolutely priceless, and I can't wait till we can go again.
Yes.
Of course, we can't go next year when we wanted to because another granddaughter is getting married in June, and she teaches. We can't go beforehand. Of course, we can't go the year that she gets married either. Her husband would frown on. But then the year after that, we can go, and she can go along.
Well, it sounds like you have a wonderful family, and the generations continue to trickle down, and you're carrying those beautiful traditions down into your next generations and sharing what you've learned about your family, and that's the most important thing.
Well, I would have none of this had it not been for my father. But unfortunately, I didn't write anything down, and I didn't record anything. And it's too bad, because my father had a photographic memory. He remembered everything. And it would have been so wonderful, because lots of little details that we didn't find.
I think that's why the University of Montana, through the Irish Studies Program and the Government of Ireland, have felt that this program is so important to get the oral histories of the Irish in Montana, and we'll be ever grateful that we have at least this bit of history finally documented.
And there are so many Irish in Montana.
Yes.
Now, did you want to look at these pictures?
Absolutely, but I will turn off the recorder right now.
Yeah, right.